go, Muniz. He's done it again. Oh, what a lovely goal. And I'm delighted for Sasha Lukic. It's his first goal for the club, and he'll love that. The Hammersmith Enders are on their feet. It's Muniz again. Oliver, 3-0 ahead.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from down under. And we're here in the middle of the international break. What are we doing? We're just relaxing, really, and taking a bit of a breather. I'm just trying to think of how we're feeling about it and where we really are. I'm not thinking about what we're doing. We're here. We're in the middle of the international break. And we're just... we're enjoying what our Fulham guy did last night against England, which maybe some of you are a little bit in two minds about, but I thought that was class and good to see Andreas Pereira doing his bit for Brazil. But we're here to talk about the second part of our squad review, and we're moving up the pitch as we did last time. We covered goalkeepers and defenders. And this time we're going to talk about midfielders and strikers. And here to discuss it with me and have an argument and have an adult discussion, I'm not going to go to you, Sam. We have Skibby and Sam, but hello to you first, Skibby.
I was going to say adult discussion, and he's like, got me or Sam to choose from. I was thinking... Whoever you go to, I just someone's going to take it the wrong way. But no, I'm happy to be here. I'm, like you say, relaxed. And going back to your point on Pereira very quickly, it's one of those things for me in the international break is, as long as they score or get an assist against England, I love that. But the fact that Pereira plays an amazing ball, and I think it's Vinicius Jr. just then messes it up and Hendrick puts it in. So then... Pereira gets nothing from the stats perspective, but what a ball it was. And, you know, it's kind of a bit of a kick in the teeth as an England fan, of course, but hey-ho. Andreas Pereira played for Brazil, and that's all that matters.
But you got to bet each way, you know. Wouldn't it be great for England to have a win? But isn't it nice to see Pereira getting recognised? Yeah, like you say, absolutely. he doesn't get a stat, but it's a good effort, and it's good to see him getting a cap and getting recognition, to be honest. And maybe
speaking of recognition, I'm also here as well for the listeners.
You wait your turn, yeah. Junior.
Also, this is the best intro that we've ever done. This is so chaotic without Jack. I just give you, this is the first, I think this is probably one of the first times you, oh yeah, no, maybe it's the second time. When second Jack's not time. On the podcast, it gets proper messy, and I enjoy it being in the filth for this part too. I'm excited.
Good evening. Good evening, Sam.
Hello.
Yeah. So here we are. we had all kinds of interesting guest plans for this evening, and unfortunately that didn't happen, but we'll save that one for later, and I won't tell you who they are. Let's jump into it, and anyone following on the live stream would have seen who they were.
Don't acknowledge it. Don't acknowledge it. Go on.
But, you know, on paper, we don't have that much to talk about. We have midfielders and strikers to talk about. But goodness me, I think there's actually a lot to cover here. If you're following on the live stream, you will see a page full of interesting faces and really... an eclectic bunch of players that are the Fulham midfield. In general, guys, and I'll throw this to either of you, how do you think that our midfielders have actually stacked up this season compared to last? Because I think it's been, forget the results, I think it's actually been a very, very different a mix of players who we're now relying on.
Yeah, I think we set a bar last season, and the player that's jumping out to me here is Pereira. Like he was phenomenal. He was really key to the way that we play, and potentially hasn't reached that kind of potential or reached that kind of level that he set last year. But that was kind of the exciting thing, is when we think about our midfielders, it's probably the strongest that we've probably the strongest area that we have at Fulham. Like, you know, you've got Pereira, Kearney, Reed, Lukic, Polina. I would also squeeze Iwobi in there. He's kind of
absolutely
can be a forward or a midfielder, but it's just so rich in depth that, you know, we look really good. And it's just a really exciting point where potentially it's our strongest area, but yet probably one of the areas that needs strengthening as well. But I guess that's just because you have so many players that play in so many different positions. Mm-hmm. But I mean, going back to your original question, I think the midfield as a Premier League outfit are pretty good. And I think Polina, second to none with his stats, let's be honest, like the tackling stats and the way he breaks up play is just unbelievable. Like, I think you always see the Twitter post, which is sort of like Polina on X amount of tackles, and then it will list all the way down to the next person in Europe. And you have to scroll forever to find someone who can be anywhere near the amount of tackles that he can put in. And I think it's very key for us to have that amount of quality, not just in tackling, but then also going forward with Pereira last year, more or less. And then Kearney sort of helped out this year. It's a very good Premier League midfield.
Mm. I think the quality of the squad isn't necessarily in question in the midfield. It's been previously discussed, but last season it was extremely cemented. It was Andreas, Polina, Reed, and then Tom Kearney off the bench. This year it's gone through a lot of ebbs and flows a little bit. It's been a lot less consistent, which probably feels like it's been a lot less defined, because I still think we're at a bit of a point where this for the last couple of weeks, it's Lukic and Polina now, and I'm going back literally 4 weeks ago, it was Reed and Lukic, and so we are constantly reshuffling and changing at the moment, so I don't think we fully found what's the absolute right starting fit. But I mean, what a dilemma. It's good players, and there's a lot of positivity here. So I think this is actually going to be quite an interesting one. I'm very excited to get into it.
Yeah, I think with a bang, you know, Polina announced himself in the Premier League and we know what he can do. I think it's fair to say that in a way, there's part of me that wants Polina to grow up and stop, be a bit more disciplined. But, you know, on the flip side, that absolute unpredictability, or maybe predictability, that he will be very, very physical is everything. And that's the sledgehammer we've got, which is a pretty fairly blunt but very effective tool for us. I mean, Tom Kearney's been great, but he's been in and out of recent. Sasha Lukic is a revelation, you know, what we've always been hoping for. And, you know, I think one of you, maybe you, Sam, said, you know, is he here to stay? Wow, if he keeps playing like he's playing at the moment, I don't think he loses his shirt.
Mm. And are we gonna go through them one by one, or are we just
absolutely?
Gonna, yeah. Okay. No, I'm waiting for that point. Anyway. Yeah. You go.
Well, why don't you wait for that point?
Because I feel like we're like edging towards something that might not actually happen because we haven't set out a clear precedent of what's going on today.
What must you be like on a first date?
Ask Paris, man. Ask Paris. Like we still struggle it. We still struggle to this very, very day.
Let's carry on. Well, let's walk through top to bottom, left to right, in the list that Jack's provided for us here. Jack's the slides guy, if anyone ever didn't know. And you know, if for anyone who's wondering, Jack is unfortunately taken ill the last minute. So he would love to be here talking about this stuff, but he's not. So we've got Bobby Decker, Dover Reed, who there can't be a Fulham supporter who doesn't have a lot of love for this guy. He's an incredible club man. He is our Swiss Army knife. he seems very happy to be that Swiss Army knife. He never looks like he's petulant about where he's placed or the role he has to play, whether that comes from the bench, whether he starts. He's just like that little spaniel that just keeps coming. And, you know, if this Fulham team is to push on to greater things, does Bobby have a role, Sam?
So you've asked me a very interesting question, because if it was just do
that's
we
what
keep
I specialize
him,
in.
Oh, shut up. if you asked me, should we hold on to him for next season? It's an absolute yes for me. For the future, like if I'm signing him for like a 5-year deal, I realistically I can't see that as being a good foresight move. I think from this stage on, it's pretty much we're offering Bobby yearly deals, which I'm really, really happy with. And if another club takes some interest in him, I think we probably would have to maybe sell him, because he's just around about 30, is that right? Or mm-hmm. around that kind of area. And he will always be a legendary servant of the club, but I think he's definitely, we're holding on to him for maybe the next year, next 2 years. I can't see too much of a future for him, but he's done his bit for me, and I absolutely adore him.
Yeah, I mean, at 31, like Sam said, you can't see him being anything more than that kind of bit part player who's going to try and sort of just give us some fresh legs or shore up mm-hmm. you know, the midfield if we're in a certain situation. But I mean, he's so sort of integral in terms of the different positions that he can play. So he can be on the wing, you can put him up top. I think we've even played him in right back. Yeah. It's just a really good utility to have. And he's been a great servant. And for me, he's always been that sort of player where everyone says, you know, is he good enough for the Premier League? And I think he's had that, you know, sort of three times now for us to sort of say, okay, now this is the year where Bobby doesn't really get a look in. But then he comes in and I think he just always sort of turns up as one of our top goal scorers. Or I think he's up there even this year. He just pops up with a goal, which I love about him. And I think that's a great asset to have on the bench. Echo exactly what Sam said. If we can get him down to maybe a 2-year deal and sort of, and he understands that he's going to be a sort of a bit part player, just a squad player at most, then absolutely, definitely mm-hmm. worth keeping just for that asset alone. But yeah, I can't see him basically being the vision of Fulham going forward. Like, you know, we're not going to build our squad around him and that kind of aspect. But that's, yeah, I'd love him to stay, but if he doesn't want to be that squad player, because obviously that's what he's going to be known or being told that he's going to be, then I wouldn't rule out that he might, you know, see if he could become, you know, if Ipswich get promoted, he could be their winger in the Premier mm-hmm. League, that yeah. kind of thing. So that's where I could see it going if he doesn't sign, but I'd love him to, but can absolutely understand if he doesn't.
In the evolution, in the, you know, very recent history, you know, flying in the championship, everyone playing a role, and you know, other than some can I say deadwood that we seem to have shifted, we all know who we're talking about. But I look at him, and this is a puzzle, right? There's no perfect answer here, because it's an evolution and it's like a rolling game that the manager and the owners are playing. You can try. Well, I don't think you can even do that anymore, because, you know, FFP and the likes doesn't allow you to have a complete clear of house and start again. So, you try and roll people off the roster, bring new people in, but there are key people who are part of the backbone. They might not be your first pick on the team sheet, but you definitely know they can do a job for you. They understand the system. And these are really, really key people as you move through the years. And so if you run the club properly, the right thing to do to these servants is to actually look after them possibly a bit longer than you otherwise might. That's just the right thing to do. And you also, you don't throw them out easily because they absolutely are reliable and they can do a job for you.
Yeah.
But I almost sort of see him, if we think we've consolidated well this year and we, despite the fact that we may not be changing our league table position greatly, we're fairly early on in the season have actually put the idea of relegation to bed for this season. So from that perspective, we actually have achieved something because we're 2 years into being a Premier League club, and I don't think there are many people still talking, uttering, whispering about Fulham being a yo-yo club anymore. I think we've lost that, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel that Bobby Decadova-Reed is my Niskanen's Cabana of last season, who has kind of done his job. Everyone's just moved up a couple of notches. Bobby gets
I see what you're
probably,
saying.
Probably gets a little bit more consideration because he's very flexible and he can defend, he can play in the middle, he can play on the right. I don't really buy that he can play up front, but technically he probably can. But he's very flexible. So if you had a bunch of injuries, suddenly Bobby's he's a very key guy, right? Yeah. But maybe if you brought in a couple of really class wingers, it's hard to see how in your squad of 25, Bobby Decadova-Reed survives. So the question is, it's still a big if we're going to do that, and I don't know the answer to that. If we don't, he probably stays. If we do, you know, you want to wish him the best and hope he can really get himself a great contract somewhere.
Go to Saudi.
I wasn't even going there. Maybe that's money. But like you say, a newly promoted team who needs some Premier League absolute quality or someone they can depend on.
Just experience.
Absolutely experienced.
There's someone to have in the dressing room would be, like really useful for those sort of teams that are coming up, like going back to Ipswich, that potentially don't have that experience in their squad to know what the Premier League has for them. So, yeah.
I'd actually really love to. I'd really love to see him, like, say, for example, go down and, like, I don't know, go to somewhere like Coventry or whatever, and then they slap the armband on him and he actually gets an opportunity to be a leader and take him to a much higher position than they otherwise would have been. I think Bobby kind of deserves a time in a team where he's really seen as like a focal point leader, because I think he actually is a really good leader. He's always carried himself extremely well, and he's always been able to like inspire a lot out of people. And I think it's just purely through happenstance. He hasn't had that many opportunities to do that at Fulham just because just squad depth has maybe gotten in the way. But I still think he could potentially have that future somewhere.
I think what we're all saying, there's a lot of love. We really hope the best for him, however this goes.
Absolutely.
Let's move on. I'm just conscious of time. It's 18 minutes in and we're talking about Bobby. let's jump over and talk about Tom Cairney. Always a lot of love for Tom Cairney. Is there a more popular player at Fulham Football Club? But he's absolutely played some masterful roles this season. Had a great season last season as well. So many people said he couldn't do it, but he clearly can. But he's knocking on, and you know, if Lukic is turning into the player that we think he is in the centre of the park, or even going forward, and some of the names that have been touted in the midfield as possible signings coming in appear. I suppose that the question is whether Polina stays or not, but probably makes a huge difference as to how we actually put our midfield together. But where's Tom Cairney going in a Fulham shirt? Sam?
Oh, look, I've actually been very critical of him over the years, much to the chagrin of the Fulham faithful. I genuinely think, actually, he has the ability to come up with so much brilliance that it's worth just kind of keeping him until he's a bit like Ream for me. It's just worth kind of just keeping him until he decides that he's ready to hang it up, or it really gets to a point where we just have to have the serious conversation where you're like, Tom, you're 38 years old and it's just not working anymore. And I think until that day comes, you just have to commit to being as loyal as possible, because you can always kind of come up with the goods. And you know what? The way in which he plays, it's kind of similar to Willian in the sense that, like, class just ages well in football if you have a team of young, exuberant, fast players around him, because all he needs is maybe like a couple of touches and he can get us goals. Or if he can't get us goals, he can provide brilliant service. So I think he, ironically, is actually part of the future. But I don't know how much longer he has in his career. But I can't see us ever selling him to somewhere else. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
Skippy?
No. I mean, Tom Cairney's in his own class of these midfielders that give him the contract, he can stay for as long as he wants. He can be here till he's 40 and just keep rolling that deal over, because I love Tom Cairney so much. But it's not so much... like, what he did for us in the championship, unreal. But there's been some games this year. So he's 33 now. And there's been some games this year where he's absolutely outplayed and been the best player on the pitch by far. And you're thinking, and really greedily, I don't want him to leave, but I genuinely think that as a 33 to 35-year-old midfielder, he could do it for a lower league Premier League team starting every week, personally. Absolutely. I think... he is just so calm on the ball. He reads the game so well. And I think he's, and as a club captain, I would love him to stay for as long as he can. And I think just for that and for the years, I think he deserves, I mean, taking, if I was to take the nostalgia aside for a second, and I was saying, based on this year alone, on his performances, does he deserve to have a 3-year deal? I would say yes. He's been phenomenal. And I think, yes, he's not going to get a look in as much, but when he speaks, he loves the club. And then the nostalgia comes back in that we've been through so much. Took us to Wembley for like the first time since 1975, I think. And to win at Wembley was unbelievable as well. So I think for that, he's up there with one of the greatest sort of Fulham captains and midfielders that we've had. Of like in sort of Fulham folklore. So I think, he's gonna retire at Fulham. I mean, in a greedy way, but again, I can see him, if he, similar to Decord over Reed, if he wants to say, you know what, I could be a bit part player at Fulham, you know, come on for the odd minute, see a game out, or I could go to, I don't know, Luton if they stay up and be like the man. I could see him doing that. And to be honest, I wouldn't dislike him for it, you know, because he deserves, his that talent is going to fade very quickly in football. Therefore, if you're starting to pick up a bit of steam now and you're playing some really good football, then why not use it for a team that's going to appreciate it, and hopefully they appreciate him as much as we love him.
One of the wonderful things about the job we do is we get to look at it from a fan perspective as well as trying to analyze it. And we can look back on all these wonderful things that these players mean to us. And very nostalgically, very romantically. And we have a very broad view of what they mean and why they should stay. Nostalgia is not a word I think, comes into the vocabulary of Marco Silva. I could be wrong.
No.
But no. I just don't think he's that guy, right? And I think he's a tactician. He's very strategic. He's got his eye firmly fixed on a prize somewhere out there in the future, which has a lot of moving parts. He needs money. He needs support. He needs players. And he's carefully selected players to really come off and then actually gel together as well. So it's actually a very interesting little Rubik's Cube and puzzle game he's playing. But it would be hard for him to overlook the Tom Cairney effect and sort of admit and acknowledge that he is a bit magical in terms of what he can do. Yes, he's getting on. Yes, he's perhaps limited somewhat in if you look at him on paper, but somehow he seems to do it. He's also got the knack of being able to come off the bench and do it really well, which not all players can do. And as you age, that's a good characteristic to have.
Well, fortunately with Tom as well, it's not an emotional decision anymore if he's winning your games. Then it's an economic one.
If he's
winning your games, it's an economically good decision.
Yeah. No, true enough. And I'm just saying that I think there's an awful lot of romance, emotion, and, you know, all those kind of soft things that do come with the love that Fulham fans and the club has for Tom Cairney. And I think he's quite wrapped up in that as well. I think he really loves Fulham. He's been there a long time. He feels the love. He loves that leadership position. And it's part of why he's so good for us. If it was up to me and casting a vote, I'd keep him. I think he's definitely got some years left in him. And I think, and the other thing is, it always comes down to, as these players sort of not fade, but drop down to another level as their career advances, it does come down to how comfortable they are with that adjustment and whether they're happy to play that role. Because some players just aren't, you know. It strikes me as Willian, who we haven't talked about, but we will, is very much comfortable with playing that very, very strategic or tactical role, whichever way you want to look at it. But he doesn't have to be the main man running 90 minutes plus time on. He's done that. He doesn't have anything to prove. No. And I think Cairney's kind of a similar ilk. Are we all in agreement? He stays?
Yeah, he stays. Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to end up with 38 players in our squad here if we keep going, because we just love, don't we?
Keep going. We'll talk more.
Let's talk about Andreas Pereira. He's done nothing to he's done everything to increase his value and brand on the world stage he didn't technically get an assist, but we're going to give it to him in that game last night. It was a very important pass. And he's a funny one. He seems to divide the opinions of a lot of people. He seems to frustrate a lot of people in the Fulham fan base. I personally think unfairly so. I think he's an incredibly hard worker. I see him trying to kind of turn his career around, really, and I'm okay with that. I think I think he really likes being at Fulham. I think he likes the responsibility that Marco gives him. He's the dead ball guy for us, you know. I know Tom Cairney can do it if Pereira is not on the field, but he's our key dead ball guy. He leads the press. He works so damn hard off the ball and on the ball. And he's been a bit up and down in terms of his form. He had a major injury at the end of last year. Never let us not forget how serious that injury was. And I thought he came back remarkably quickly. And I think that's actually affected him quite badly in terms of just his body. But I love this player. I'm going to get in there early and say I really love Andres Pereira, and I really like him being in this squad. And I think as long as Marco's there, he's not going anywhere.
So to question you then, do you feel like he's too comfortable in that position?
Ooh.
I'd love him to have some really hot competition, of course.
Mm.
At the moment, he's got players like, you know, who's his competition? Alex Iwobi. Alex Iwobi can do it in a number of places, so he's not that guy who is only the Pereira replacement sitting on the bench just chomping at his heels. You know, Harry Wilson touted as a possible. I don't see that. Harry Wilson's out the wing cutting in for me.
Yeah.
It's not that he couldn't do it.
Yeah, with Iwobi and Wilson as well, they're both occupying that. Like, I much prefer them right wing. But, yeah, no, Skibby's made a really good point that because I was about to just sing the praises of Pereira as well, and I didn't actually think about the fact that Pereira is extremely comfortable just because he doesn't actually have any direct competition. I actually think you can argue that does actually speak a lot of volumes to how good Andres Pereira has actually been. But, I mean, it's the exact same thing with De Gea at Man United. When he got complacent as well. So it is something that you need to
I think it's a good point. I think it's a great point.
Yeah.
We would get more out of him if he had a real hot piece of competition.
Because the way that I see it, last year, man, he had something to prove. He came in as the preseason Pirlo from Man United. He wasn't really liked. I think he gave away the ball in his last game on loan in Brazil that lost them a game, I think, and they really turned against him.
Yeah,
I did. And therefore, when we signed him for, I think it was like 8 to 10 million, you know, we had this whole Brazilian contingent saying, oh, good luck with him, he's useless. You had the Man United go, oh, enjoy pre-season because he'll be amazing, and then you get into the league. He had so many doubters. And I mean, I reckon there was probably a lot of Fulham fans who thought, what are we actually going to get here? This is a bit of a gamble. Mm. And he had so much to prove. And I think that really did push him on to be as successful as he was. But what I'm seeing now is glimpses of last season. So in the straight into my mind is Nottingham Forest at home, where we won 5-0 and he got 3 assists, I think. One of them was arguable, but some of them were absolutely phenomenal. And now I'm like, wow, this player, like, do we have anyone else in this team who can, you know, pick up the ball in sort of that number 10 space and just pick out a pass as well as he can? I mean, Wilson probably, I don't know, 5 times out of 10 potentially. Iwobi has that in his locker, but probably not as precise. He is just such a luxury player that we don't really seem to have anyone else in the team that can pick out or pick apart a defense as well as him. But then I see elements of against Spurs. Yes, he picked up the ball, played it out to Robinson for the first Muniz goal. But then there's elements where he just passes the ball to no one or gets it completely wrong or dallies on the ball, thinks he's got too much time. And, you know, that frustrates me. And that's almost if we had someone who's on the bench going, this guy's having a bit of a stinker, I can come in here. I think we would potentially see a better Pereira and probably a more consistent Pereira. But the fact that I think he's quite comfortable is he's like, well, as long as I put in a good cross or a good corner for a goal, then if I give the ball away a couple of times, it's not the end of the world. That's the body language that I see from him. And don't get me wrong, I love Pereira. I can prove it. I've got a shirt with Andreas on the back. So I am Team Pereira, and I love him to bits. But I do see the slight turn on him. And I think it's for those little stupid things where he dallies on the ball, gives it away really cheaply. And I think if he can just iron that out somehow, and maybe if we need to apply a little bit of pressure or, I don't know, something that this needs to bring him a bit more sharper into games, then we get our number 10. But right now, I think we need that bit of competition. But where's it going to come from? Like I said, the quality that he possesses in that number 10 role in terms of that final ball and the pressing that he does. Is Harris going to step up? Sekulurak, is that his name? I think he can play like number 10. I'm not too sure.
A long way off.
Yeah,
it does.
I think quality is really hard.
No, I think you make a really good point, Skibby, that maybe I'm too much of an apologist and maybe being too soft on him for his serious injury last year. And obviously, every player does better if there's true competition or they fall by the wayside because they can't handle it. Given his sort of career profile, you'd think he's got a lot to play for. And I wonder now that he's actually found his way back into the Brazil squad, whether that gives him even more to play for, to really perform, because he's going to have people watching his reels and, you know, looking out for whether he's really worth them betting on and backing him.
And he's got to have a better season than Paquetá. And that's the competition. That's what you need.
Yeah. But you actually want it in-house. You do actually want it on the training ground, and you want Marco to be kicking his heels and saying more. That's not harder. It's an intensity that you're talking about. He's got the skill. Yeah. There's not that much to learn. It's an intensity. And he works hard, but it's that ticking it up the next level where he seems to drop off in games, and it just goes a bit missing.
It's going to be really interesting in like the next coming seasons, actually, and especially with all the international stuff like fastly approaching, because he could I mean, look, if you were still in the Prem in like the next couple of years time, and he's still performing, he's still our main guy, and he's still putting in the results that we're getting, he's a serious opportunity to go to the World Cup, because Brazil will always have depth, but if you're in a top Premier League side, you're going to get a decent look, and especially if you're the main talisman. So he could be self-motivated. I think one thing that we can definitively say is I don't think Luke Harris is going to usurp him or put any pressure on him anytime soon. So I think we would have to sign somebody new to actually come in. And I do actually have faith in Silva, because I think Silva's actually proven in the past couple of years he's done very good at signing players to take over positions, which is something that we actually haven't seen in a long time from managers that we've had. Because Silva's first two seasons were very, very good, but he's actually streamlined new people to come in and basically put pressure on existing positions and largely evolve them to a better quality and a higher quality. So I think that signing is probably around the corner. And then from then, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how Andreas actually fits in. But for the foreseeable future, for the near future, Andreas 100% stays.
Let's talk about, let's pick on some easy ones here. Let's talk about Polinia. Obviously, there's some uncertainty about whether he stays or goes at the end of the season. I think it's a lot less open and shut than we thought it was 6 months ago for a number of reasons, which I think we all understand. Don't need to go over that. But I thought Polinia responded. He walked the walk very well after that whole Bayern Munich thing collapsed. He said, I'm a professional. Marco Silva said he's a professional. And he really did knuckle down. And there's never been a moment of watching Polinia that I've thought he had an attitude problem. He was dragging his lip along the ground because he couldn't get his big signing. And for what was probably fairly devastating for him personally, career-wise, he's actually picked himself up and has professionally carried on in impeccable style, I think it's fair to say. So it seems to me that if the universe or the stars didn't align for him and no one came looking, if he had to stay another couple of years at Fulham, I don't think that'd be the end of the world for him. I think he quite likes being at Fulham. He surely knows how much he is loved and appreciated inside the squad and loved in the stands, surely. And I think he's very driven by that. I think he's enjoying his football at Fulham. I'm making all this stuff up, of course, but that's my take on what I see. And so it's, to me, it's by no means a foregone conclusion that he's out the door. And and I'm thinking we're not going to be making any overtures to try and chuff him up and sell him, because he's worth an awful lot to us. Whatever his market price, he's worth more than that to us for where we are. So in my head, Pellini is staying, which kind of does anyone have a different view to that? Or something else that I'm missing?
I mean, with Pellegrino, it's an interesting one, because obviously, like you say, he was pictured ready to announce, you know, his Bayern move, massive move, one of the biggest teams in world football. Like, yeah, you'd be gutted. And fair play, like you say, to pick yourself up and keep going is really commendable. I guess the interesting point for me is the fact that he signed a new contract after the whole ordeal. So I guess, yeah, we probably matched his wage, potentially, that, you know, the finances.
Can only be that. Has to be that.
Exactly. Yeah. The financials that he was going to get at Bayern, the financials that his brother, who's his agent, missed out on. You know, agents love their blood-sucking deal that they get from transfers, whatever. So, yes, fair enough. We've done it from a financial point of view. But then what I found really interesting was there was no minimum fee release clause put in there, according to reports. So therefore, anyone who wants him now, we've got him on a certain deal, which means you have to pay through the nose. Like, we were in a certain position where we were ready to accept 60 million in the summer. Now we've got him on a new deal. Now he's worth more to us. I mean, we can now just say, here's a figure, take it or leave it. And the same, well, like we talked about Robinson in the last one. And I think for me, we're now starting to see how he plays for Fulham and how that would probably work for a top six side. And I don't think it's as effective. He's great in a Fulham team where you have to defend a lot. But, I mean, feel free to disagree with me, but I don't think his passing and way of sort of carrying the ball is fantastic. But in a side where you're going to be attacking a lot and you need to be able to, like, think about the Rodri's of the world, Declan Rice, where they can carry the ball, they can pass the ball. I don't think he's got those qualities personally. And therefore, in a squad, in a team where they're not going to be defending that much, is he going to be as effective? Is he really worth it? And I think they've now started to sort of look into that. And I've seen that Bayern apparently is now calling on the fact that they are looking at Pellegrino. I haven't heard much on that anymore. I can't see him, and he's getting older. I personally think the options may not come as much as everybody thinks.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he fits the narrative of, or the way that certain managers want to play when they're in the Champions League and competing for titles. I just don't think he's that sort of player. So I would not be that surprised if you stayed with us, but yeah.
I actually don't disagree with that at all. I mean, I love this man so, so deeply. He's up there with Bobby Zamora for me in terms of the greatest Fulham players ever. And Skibby, you do not know how high praise that actually is for a young Sam. that's Mount Everest here. So carrying on from like what I said the other week, I actually 100% agree. I think wherever he goes, even if he was going to go to Bayern, he would be a rotation player and he would be coming in and out. I can't see him being an absolute in and out week to week starter for whatever clubs. He would have to go to a top six. He could probably go to a Premier League club. I genuinely don't think, I can't see who would actually want him or use him effectively for all the reasons that Skibby literally just said then. I mean, if you think about like Calvin Phillips at Manchester City, who's a pretty similar profile. He's just a bruiser. He's just, you don't get past me. And then as a result, Man City can't play him. because he's just not the way in which they like to play. I can't see him going to a Barcelona. I can't see him going anywhere near Real Madrid because they only want to sign 21-year-olds at the moment. He would have to go to an elite-level club in order to justify the move. It's the exact same thing that I said the other week with the Harry Kane situation. These players who are of an elite class, and I do think Polina is in an elite class, their options are actually significantly smaller than you would otherwise think. And fortunately, at least, he does seem to be incredibly happy. I think it really, really fits his lifestyle to be in London. I can't see him moving to another Premier League club for just reasons that, like, it would. He doesn't seem like that sort of guy. I can never in a million years see him signing for like a Tottenham. I just can't really see it. Maybe that's wrong. And I don't think he's going back to Sporting or anything like that anytime soon. I think we probably will actually have him next season. But I think if he is going to leave, it would be because Pauline has been offered a move to a club that he would otherwise really, really love to go to. I think he really wanted to go to Bayern Munich. That's why we were happy to let him go for 60, about 60. But I think he wouldn't just do that for any other club, you know?
Well, it would seem inconceivable that he would go to another mid-table club in the Premier League. Why would you bother? Right, because I think Fulham can probably match a wage that would satisfy him for a mid-table club. Why would he go to a lower-end Premier League club? Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. We've talked about who the top six might need or want him. That seems difficult. So, yeah, indeed, where does he go? And it feels to me like Bayern Munich may well have been our drunken sailor in the sense that, you know, the drunken sailor walking through the door and paying over the odds for, you know, that picture up on the wall that they think is an original. It's in fact the 47th print.
Yeah.
and the longer he showcases his talent in the Premier League, the more people sort of understand what he represents. Mm-hmm. Incredibly valuable to us, but he's a certain sort of player that not everyone needs. And at the very high end, maybe they're looking for a more complete article. The other part about it, just a second, Sam, the other part about it is we all know that we have these players who represent incredible value for where we are at the moment in our life cycle. And that may not match what others in the market would be prepared to pay, and that's fine. But it always worries me, and we saw it, I think, with Mitro, that, you know, for the number of goals that Mitro was scoring at the time, I know he had a bit of a drop-off, but if you look at the number of goals he scored in the Championship and then had a reasonably good series, and he's proved himself in the Premier League, it was possible that we could have got even more for Mitro. And we sold him, and I don't think it was an incredible number we sold him for, and it was pocketed. It wasn't even reinvested, and it was sort of like pocketed, which immediately made me think, well, what's going on here? Are the owners ready to leave the building because they're not going to reinvest it? And so what would make me nervous is that anyone coming for 40, 50, 55, maybe 60 million pounds, which is probably 20 or 30 of what I think he's worth to us, they may just sell him simply to pocket the money, realize the sale, and put it in the back pocket and not necessarily reinvest it. That would always be of some concern to me. Sam, go.
I was just going to say, I do think he will. I think inevitably he will end up playing Champions League. I think he will end up playing Champions League in a. I'm not 100% sure where he'll go, but I think that's his future, and I think he'll be absolutely fine. And when he does leave, it will not be tumultuous. It will not be heart-wrenching. I think it will be very respectful. I think it will be very, very respectfully done. Honestly, the reasons why the Bayern deal was so messy is because Bayern fucked it up. I didn't think it had anything to do with Polina at all. He was just kind of a bystander in it. And Bayern did it wrong, and they paid for basically doing it wrong. And I mean, their whole season this year is indicative of their terrible decisions in the last couple of years. But I do think when he does go, we will shed the appropriate tears. But I think it will be all done on very, very good terms. And I'll be devastated when he'll go. But I don't think it'll be happening next season.
I honestly don't think it's a dead cert, Sam. So don't brace yourself. I don't think you need any extra meds. I think he could be safe. I think he could be around for some time. I hope he is.
Champions League with Fulham for sure. That's what Sam was trying.
Yeah, around the bush next time.
Just he'll be playing Champions League in the next 2 years. He'll stay. It's fine.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Sasa Lukic. I'm not going to do an intro on this, Skibby. Tell me how you think this story is going to unfold.
Yeah, I think he's taken a bit of time to sort of settle in English football. I think that's always going to be just for any player coming to the Premier League. I think it takes time to adjust. I know there's this whole narrative around, oh, he lost his Serbian friend. But I think at the end of the day, they're all professional. That's all shit, if you ask me. But anyway, I think it's to disrupt that kind of Reed, Polina, Pereira type. You know, we had that lockdown sort of last year, and to sort of break into that midfield and get to the way that Marco plays is going to take time. I think it's not unheard of that we see players take almost a year to get used to a certain system and a certain way of life. And I think we're starting to see that now. And I think Lukic is showing why he was really heavily sort of scouted. I think he was one of those players that Marco wanted. He was very good at Torino. There was rumours that he was looking at a loan to Napoli in the January transfer window. And I think we're starting to see why. He's a very good player on the ball. And he's it's almost a bit uncharacteristic because he's quite tall, strong, bit of a brute, kind of similar build to Polina, but he's actually quite good on the ball. And sort of almost the kind of the yin to his yang almost. You've got this real brute tackler, and then you've got this kind of big guy who can hold his own but pick a pass out. And I think that's a really good kind of pivot to have, and I can see it growing as a center midfield partnership going forward. I think what we're seeing, and I think this is something I wanted to touch upon, is we were very heavily linked with Andre from Fluminense in Brazil. I think last summer they talked about January. You know, it almost seemed like one of these things where Ali Mac had gone over to Brazil. It was happening, and for reasons beyond us, we don't know why it hasn't happened. I mean, people talked about the Polina kind of being sort of going off in the summer to whoever, and then Andre will come in. But I just don't think he's the same sort of player. So if Andre was to come in, he would sort of play in that number eight where Lukic has come or is playing. And the reason now, I'm going to go back to the original point. So it does make sense. Stay with me here. But yeah. I think Lukic has been showing Marco that he was that kind of player, and that's probably put that transfer on the sort of the back burner a little bit, because Marco's now thought, you know what, we've actually got a player here that we don't need to spend, you know, 30 million on this Brazilian who, yes, is a great player but potentially a higher risk one coming into the Premier League for all the reasons I just talked about. But I think Lukic is that player who can solidify that number eight role for us, but it's just taken a lot of time, and it's an interesting one because I think Marco highly rates him. I trust Marco, and I think that Lukic will be that number eight going forward into next season.
I definitively think that Lukic and Polina, I think that's from what I've seen, I think that's going to be the partnership next season. I think that's going to blossom. I think we have only just scratched the surface on what Lukic can actually do. From everything that I've seen of him, I've always rated him and had to fight Jack and Dad on this on like a weekly basis, because I really see something there. I love his ball control. I think he's so unprecedentedly graceful. He just appears. He's like a mushroom. He just appears in random spots, and I don't know how he gets there, but I think he has the capacity to be really, really effective, and I think that's going to be even more palpable when he gets more confidence. It's 100% yes for me. It does then segue quite nicely into discussing Harrison Reed, because with Lukic on the up, I really don't know where Harrison Reed goes.
Lukic is a funny one, though, in that I really worried about watching the body language. I worried about the fact that he didn't look like he was fitting in. Almost, I don't know if it's a language thing, or he seemed like he was a bit on the outer. Whenever you see group shots of the players at Motspur Park, he doesn't seem to be in the thick of it. You know, you've got all the Brazilian guys in goofing around and messing about, and they've clearly got something going there. And even though their language wasn't that great, some of them, they had big personalities and just comical guys and just happy to sort of mess about. And Lukic seemed very reserved and a little bit awkward, maybe just a fairly shy guy, not that extroverted at all. And I just wondered how much he was enjoying his time at Fulham, which worried me. And then, you know, you talk about people adjusting to a different league like the Premier League. He clearly had achieved really good things in Italy. So there was obviously a player there, but could he step up? So you'd expect that to be a transition, kind of in a quite a linear way. And to me, his progression has not been linear. I thought he was kind of bobbling along on a fairly flat line for quite a long time, and suddenly he's popped up, almost like someone's pumped his tires up or given him like a shot in the arm, or in the old-fashioned way, gingered him, you know? So a bit like the conversation around Mooney, is this change of form a flash in the pan, or has he actually arrived now and got his shyness out of the way? Is he suddenly confident? Is he suddenly going to turn up every week and say, play at the same level of intensity? I've got no doubt about whether technically he can do it or not. It's clear he can do it.
But I think he's a player that needs to start is the main thing.
Yeah, maybe that. But you know what I'm saying? He's just arrived, isn't he? His transformation has been really quite quick. If you look at the level he was playing at before, he's just suddenly popped up. And I don't know what that is. It probably is a bit like Muniz, probably no surprise at all for Marco and his team, because they've looked at him and they believe in him, and he couldn't turn it on, you know, on match day. But I genuinely hope that he kind of believes in himself now as much as we all do. And I guess it's also heavily dependent on, we're talking about a pairing here and assuming that Polina is staying, because I think if Polina doesn't stay, that kind of the cards are back on the table or up in the air, however you want to describe it, because who's going to play that, pardon me, that Polina role? I'm not 100% sure that's Lukic. It's certainly not. It's not. Reed's a kind of wind up bunny, but he's not a powerhouse and a presence. It's a different sort of player. But anyway, let's talk about Harrison Reed. So I think Lukic, I think we're all in agreement that if it's our choice, he absolutely stays. We want to see a lot more of that. If you're listening, Sasha. Harrison Reed, Sam?
Controversially, Now, you know what? Just for the sake of discourse, I was about to go back on what I was going to say, but now I'm going to say it with my chest. I reckon it might be Harrison Reed's time. Literally saying it out of my mouth, I am thinking, well, if we lose Polina and this, that, and the other, and then we could probably fit him back in. But I think if we hold on to Polina, I think Harrison Reed is a really, really great addition to the squad, but I just can't even really see a future, and I can see him offering more to potentially another team. He's always, for me, right, and this is coming from like a fan, I actually really like Harrison Reed. He's kind of always almost something, and it never kind of fully actualizes. I'm not sure if that's fair. That's probably me being a bit on the harsh side. But I think going forward, he's not necessarily going to get any better, or I can't necessarily see him getting any better. His entire game strategy largely resolves around like his energy levels and the amount that he can actually commit to a game. And I think as he gets older, that's probably going to dissipate more and more. Obviously, if we lose Polina, then we probably do require Harrison Reed. But if I'm thinking purely strategically, I reckon we could potentially sell Harrison, get a decent amount of money for him now, and then actually reimburse that into potentially a younger player.
Well, Jack, who's following on along the live stream and just popped a pretty reasonable point forward and said, if you get rid of Reed, who's your backup for Polina when he gets his 3-6 game bans? Tom Kenny does not do the job of Harrison Reed or
no, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Polina. You know, he's not that rock in the base of our midfield. That's a decent point, and maybe that is the overhead of, you know, having a player like Polina on your side, that discipline issue requires you to have some backup that you might not otherwise, you know, think you need.
But to counter that, and then I will allow more space, but to counter that, if his entire role in the squad exists just because of Polina, then I think we do need to sign somebody else, because I think we should be having players that are actually pushing guys forward and actually creating, either pushing them to be better or taking their spot. So I don't think we should basically keep him for just if Polina decides to stay or go or get X amount of yellow cards.
See, I completely agree with Sam, if I'm honest. I think we've talked about, you know, Fulham being this mid-table club. We want to push for more. We want to go on those European trips. And for me, like you said earlier, nostalgia goes out the window with Marco. And I think Reed is the prime example there. Marco tried to change his game when we brought in Polina. So Reedy was always that number six, break up play, kind of, you know, just an absolute nuisance. But we tried to change him into that number eight. Get more goals in your game. Sort of go, like when Polina wins that ball, push Reedy forward. And Lukic, for me, is just, I think I saw it against Spurs. He was the most forward number eight I've seen this season for Fulham, getting into the box. And he got that goal, and it just looked natural. And you don't, and nothing against Reed. We tried to change his game to sort of fit the way. And I think he's tried it. It didn't quite work out. Yes, he comes in for Polina when he gets those bans. But I think, for me, Reedy could be that player who we upgrade and we look into. I mentioned Andre. I think he is a midfielder, which Marco is very keen on, judging by the reports, and potentially is that the kind of step up, the ball playing defensive midfielder comes in to sort of take us to the next level. And then, you know, Lukic becomes the backup, and, you know, the hierarchy just completely shifts all down one, you know. And unfortunately for me, Kearney's still got that quality. Lukic is showing that quality. Polina, next level elite quality. And really, for me, is unfairly, in a very competitive squad, the weakest centre mid that we have. And do we need to upgrade him and to go to the next level? In my eyes, yes. And like you say, nostalgia goes out the window at that point.
I think it's fair to say that a lot has changed in the last couple of weeks. Lukic's sudden change of form has kind of shone a bit of a white light on Harrison Reed and his role and the luxury of carrying him. I don't know. There is an issue with Polina being that guy who is always going to have a discipline problem unless he miraculously turns around, you know, his character, and also convinces all of the officials that he's suddenly Mr. Nice Guy, which I don't think is going to happen. So you do need a player who can step in for him and do that job. But like you say, it probably begs for a new class of player who can actually compete with Polina, rotate with Polina, step in for him when he's banned. And if he gets injured or we lose him, is an absolute simple replacement with some other qualities as well. Mm-hmm. So what are we saying? Harrison Reed, on the base of Polina stays, Lukic continues to play the way he does, Kenny continues to survive and go forward. Harrison Reed stays or goes?
I think go.
Goes with a step with a good replacement or a better replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. It's harsh, but I think it is fair. Let's just quickly wrap up. We've got a number of other names on this midfielder page here. Tyrese Francois, Luke Harris.
Go on. Francois, not Harris.
Oh, I was about to say.
We're going to get the bow and arrow straight out. Okay, yeah. Francois, sorry, Tyrese. It was great. But, Luke Harris, I mean, he's been out on loan. He's had a moderate season from what I can gather in an ordinary side, which is difficult. But I'm not sure that he is pushing very hard against the quality of the people we're talking about and have spent the last 20 minutes talking about. There's some other names on the list here. Ockers, Dibley Diaz, who we've seen bits and pieces of. Pajaziti, is that his name? Pajaziti?
Yeah. And just quickly touch on him. There's a weird one because he's pushing 23, I think, and, you know, he's still in that under-21 squad.
Yeah.
You'd like to think someone who's highly rated in any new setup, by around sort of 2021, you're starting to make squads. And it's just not filling me with confidence, unless there's something that they still see in him. But I don't know. He's not even out on loan at the moment, I think, because he was part of the 7 goals within at Reading in the under-21s the other day. So he's still in sort of our youth setup, but it's not really one that's filling me with excitement like Harris or, you know, Dibley Diaz.
No, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one. We talk about this ad nauseum. But it's a very, very difficult thing for Marco. Short of money, short of support, you know, just on the cusp, if you like, of Europe. He's got too much to play for to also be a manager charged with developing these young guys. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And he needs hired guns who can do a job for him. And I just don't think he feels particularly pressured to play that role. Just like he brought in some backup from that mob down the road for a striker, but as soon as he didn't need him, he was couldn't care less about, you know, the fact that we're going to do £4 or 5 million on him.
Yeah, we've spoken about it previously, but Marco is amazing at getting players and telling them, you are actually the dog's bollocks. You've either forgotten it, or I see it in you, but you don't necessarily see it in yourself. And these are typically players around about mid-20s to kind of like the, I don't want to say twilight of their career, but what, we signed Andreas when he was like 27, 28-ish around mm-hmm. that. Marco's really, really great at knowing when somebody can ball and really getting that out of them to the fullest ability. He has really kind of proven that he doesn't necessarily have time for basically the gamble that is youth players. Kind of seen that a little bit with Luke Harris. He's got him to like come on for like a couple of games, but I think it's quite evident Marco hasn't really been very good at being like, I'm going to find a way to get you into the squad. The only exception I can think of was Carvalho, and that's a little bit of an anomaly. Championship as well. It's not the Premier League. The Premier League is a very, very different league for that, and it's not. You either set up your side for like a 3-year plan to introduce young players like Brighton, like Liverpool have done, and you really work towards that with a lot of foresight. It's very, very hard to just abruptly start getting players in, and especially with the way that Marco currently does everything. The only exception to that, and I can't see us getting to attackers tonight, but I think someone like Gotto has actually proven to Marco that when it does actually get into the squad, Marco will say to him, I know you can do this, you're really good at this, and I can find a spot for you with these younger guys. And I can't really blame him for that, because who actually wants to gamble? Who wants to gamble when you're one all against City? Who wants to really gamble on the young kid, which you really don't know what their future is going to be? I can't see too much of a future for these guys at this current stage. But it's hard because you still want to hold on to the young talent because you still don't necessarily know. The only exception to that being Tyrese Francois, because I think Tyrese Francois is like about 24, 25 now. I could be wrong. And yeah, I think if we were going to see it, if we were going to see time from him, we probably would have seen that already.
And he's also got a loan to Denmark, hasn't he? And you think
something
he'd sort of follow Harris to the League One or Championship. Like at his age, you'd expect Championship by now.
Yeah.
If you're going to be in the... Because, I mean, the golfing quality between Championship and Premier League is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no dead certs. Like if you're doing really well in the Championship, there's no certainty that you'll do it in the Premier League. Mm. But, I mean, it gives you a fighting... Yeah, I mean, it gives you a fighting chance, right? But... To be 23, 24, and you're still not at, I mean, I would say sort of no disrespect to Danish fans, but would say that, I mean, they're the Danish Premier League is probably like League One, upper League Two level, when it's just doesn't fill you with the utmost confidence. And that's why you think that you're not going to see much from him anymore.
I think you're right. Listen, guys, we've been at it for over an hour talking about the midfielders. We haven't even made it, you know, to the last line up the pitch. And I think I'm happy with that. I think we've done it justice. There's a lot to talk about. There's not only quite a number of names, but, you know, some really interesting, not conundrums, but little puzzle questions in all of this. And I think hopefully we've done it justice. But I think whilst the group is much smaller for the attackers, I can see us going again for another hour. And I'm not going to do that to anyone's ears. So I think we should wrap it up and actually save it for another conversation in a few days' time, if you're good with that.
I agree.
Yeah. And so... thank you very, very much, Skibby, for all your insights and good commentary.
No, thank you very much for having me. And I'm looking forward to talking about Muniz for at least an hour. So,
I was actually putting aside. I'm actually making space for 2 hours, but that seems rude. Sam, thanks very much for everything tonight.
Thanks for having me. And, you know, I'm actually really glad that we, rightly or wrongly, I'm glad that we've actually taken a really good amount of time to actually give some respect to, like, these guys. And I'm actually really excited to give the attackers an equal amount of time as well, because on what other Fulham podcast are they going to go into this excruciating amount of detail? It's the care and detail, guys. It's care and details, you know?
Like we planned it.
Well, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very good. So once again, thanks everyone for listening, and please do like and subscribe, and particularly like and follow on your wherever you get your podcast, so you do get a notification when we release. I know it's a crowded market out there, and there's lots of people vying for your ears, but we'd like to have yours. So please follow and get a notification so we can get in your pocket.
Leave a review as well. Apparently, that's really helpful.
Oh, yeah, sure. Leave a review. So thanks again. Thanks for listening. Hopefully, Jack will be fit and well next week, and he can lead this in a more efficient way. It'll never meander quite like when I've got the mic, but he'll probably do it in a much more efficient way. Thanks, everyone, for following along on the live stream. We always enjoy your comments and your little sarky things that you throw in there for us to throw us off. But without any further ado, it's time to say goodbye until the next one. And so come on, you whites.